everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is the Week in Review, and this is some of what we're going to be talking about.
I will ensure America always has the strongest, most lethal fighting force in the world.
Wow. Does the United States military really need to be the most lethal? Interesting word choice, no? I'm Rick Sanchez. Hey, what do you say we do this? All righty, here we go. We are right in the thick of things, right in the middle of the U.S. election season. The conventions are finally over, and now it's a dead heat to the finish. This is our Week in Review, and obviously we're going to be talking a lot about that. Joining me now to do this and to go through this week's events is Dr. Wilmer Leon. He is the co-host of the Critical Hour on Radio Sputnik. Great show, by the way. You should catch it. And here he is to talk about all this. So let's get started. First on the list, we all know that the United States and Mexico are tied at the hip, always have been. There's an amazing history. Much of the United States, if not most of the United States, used to be Mexico. So politically, economically, demographically, it's definitely a long-standing relationship. And we also know that the United States has tended to be the big brother in this relationship throughout the history of these two neighbor countries. But that might be changing. Boy, is it ever. These days, anyway, or at least in the last couple of days. I want you to take a listen now to the president of Mexico scolding the United States and its U.S. ambassador to Mexico.
No es posible que este un embajador extranjero opine lo que está bien o lo que está mal en nuestro país. Esa no es la función de un embajador.
So what he's basically saying is, who the hell is the United States and its ambassador to tell us what to do in our country when it comes to our own political process, and in this case, our judicial reform process? In short, here's what's going on. So Mexico wants to change how its federal judges are chosen. It wants them to be elected by the people rather than selected by, you know, politicians and corporations. The U.S. says, no, we don't like that. We think that will hurt democracy. And that is why President Obrador seems to be saying, mind your own damn business. That's what's going on right now. Interesting, these two countries being in this feud. Wilmer, what saith you?
Well, you know, back when they had the summit of some of the Americas a couple of years ago in Los Angeles, President Biden was talking about democracy and sovereignty. We must protect democracy. We must protect sovereignty. And now here, Mexico, a sovereign nation, meaning you are able to control the politics and the economics within your own defined geographic space, and you can use force to do so, now wants to go to a democratic process of electing judges, not appointing judges, and now the United States wants to cry foul. Well, there's another thing that Obrador is, that AMLO is complaining about. The United States using NGOs as cover for regime change. Yeah. The same thing that the United States did in Ukraine, the same thing the United States is trying to do in Venezuela, the same thing United States is trying to do in Haiti, using NGOs like the National Endowment for Democracy and other types of organizations to fan the flames of unrest in the country.
Well, it's fascinating, I think, to me that, and I'm not sure why we're doing this. I mean, I'm not sure I'm smart enough to understand the legal and political ramifications of why we think it's better for the federal judges to be appointed rather than elected, especially given what's going on with our own Supreme Court right now, where we're finding out that billionaires own a bunch of the guys who were, you know, appointed and not elected. Maybe we should be looking at that situation as well. As far as AMLO, as you call him, President Obrador, complaining about the United States wanting to engage itself, you know what? There I disagree with him. I mean, I disagree when we go to Ukraine and tell those people what to do, or Russia, or Iraq, or any of these countries that are maybe 1% of Americans could even find on a map. But Mexico and the United States, we should have a relationship where we can tell them what we think and they should tell us what we what they think as well. I think. What, am I wrong?
Well, we should be able to tell them what we think, but we shouldn't be able to tell them what to do.
Correct.
They are a sovereign nation. And the reason I believe that the United States wants to try to control Mexico's judicial process is for the same reason that the Supreme Court that Donald Trump has installed is working in the interest of neoliberals in this country. Mm. He who pays the piper calls the tune. And so the United States wants to be in control of the legislative process of Mexico.
The judicial process in this case, yeah. No,
I'm sorry, the judicial process.
It was clear. Point well taken. All right, so let's talk about this since we're talking politics. Just this week, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump picked up another key political endorsement from a progressive Democrat, former progressive Democrat, Hawaii Congresswoman, former Hawaii Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, hated by the corporate media, by the way, had this to say about Donald Trump.
We saw this through his first term in the presidency, when he not only didn't start any new wars, he took action to de-escalate and prevent wars. He exercised the courage that we expect from our commander-in-chief in exhausting all measures of diplomacy, having the courage to meet with adversaries, dictators, allies, and partners alike in the pursuit of peace.
Here's my take on this, and I'm interested to hear yours. I know you're no fan of Donald Trump, but I think he's less worse than what we have right now on foreign policy. But to hear her make him out to be Mother Teresa seems a bridge too far. My take. What is yours?
A bridge way, way, way too far. And I can't even see the bridge. It's so far away.
Like the River Kwan.
I think what we're seeing demonstrated through Tulsi Gabbard is her anger and disgust at the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
And so
which is legitimate.
Which is incredibly legitimate. But the path that she has taken, I have to question. So, for example, for her to say that Donald Trump started no wars doesn't mean he didn't try. He just wasn't successful.
When he assassinated, a leader of Iran, he may have
General Soleimani.
Exactly. Yeah, I know where you're going with that.
Who was even in life a patron saint in Iran. Mm. And they don't even have saints, but you get my point.
I get your point.
Respected
guy. He's their guy, and we shouldn't be going around the world assassinating other people's leaders. Just shouldn't do it. I don't care.
And let me say, right. I saw him. I saw him when I was in Iran. He was standing for a second. He was standing right in front of me, and I got a sense of how revered they call him, the ghost. And when I reached down to pick up my camera to take his picture, and he was gone.
Yeah, he was. And by the way, Trump was probably doing Bibi's bidding when he did that.
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
So fortunately, Iran was much more patient than we would have been had the tables been turned. So for her.
Here's the point. Let's talk about what we're talking about. There are some geographical locations in the world where I think Trump has a better position than, let's say, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's. And Ukraine,
absolutely,
for example, is one of those. I tend to like his position when it comes to NATO, for example, and not just kissing their butts and making them kiss our butts all the time. So there are places where I like his positions better, but that doesn't mean it's across the board better than anybody else out there. Is that fair?
Yes, that is very fair, but his different positions doesn't necessarily mean there will be different policy. Yeah. Because the elite that are actually in control of the policy.
Smart.
Donald Trump can say what he wants to say, but he can't do what he wants to do.
Point well taken. Point well taken. And you articulated that well. Better than the one before where you got your words mixed up. patron saint or whatever. All right, let's play the opposite game now. Ready? I love the opposite game because I do this with my granddaughter all the time, and I'm pretty good at it now. Here's Kamala Harris closing the Democratic convention while sounding, unlike Tulsi Gabbard, remarkably hawkish, almost neoconish. I would call this, you're going to love this, a cross between John Bolton and John Wayne, but it's Kamala Harris. Take a listen.
As Commander-in-Chief, I will ensure America always has the strongest, most lethal fighting force in the world.
Yeah! It's almost like you're expecting, we're going to go around, and we're going to kill, and we're going to win, and we're going to, hey, we're the best, and we're going to, it's like saber-rattling, oh my God, I don't know, man. It's like, what happened? The Democratic Party, when you and I were growing up, these guys were like peaceniks. They used to smoke marijuana and sit around going, oh man, we got to find ways to make people better, and love, and peace, and we've come a long way there, Wilmer.
She's fighting ghosts and old wars. what we're experiencing now is a total shift in the geopolitical landscape.
Yeah,
we're moving from a unipolar, the U.S. is totally in control, to a multipolar world, and that shift is not taking place based upon military firepower and jingoism. The shift is taking place based upon economics, hence BRICS, mm-hmm. and the other international like the Chinese Cooperative Bank or whatever, I forget what that thing is called.
So
they're moving away from the World Bank and the IMF off of the dollar to BRICS, and so basically, she's articulating ancient, antiquated positions.
Do you think that the Dems feel like they need to sound like this so they can beat the Republicans because there's a hole there kind of in the marketplace? And we have to sound tough. Even if we're not, we need to sound tough. Or do you think they really buy it and they're going to do this? I mean, I think if you look at the Biden years have been hawkish as hell. I mean, this guy didn't. There's not a place in the world he doesn't want to bomb. I mean, was he led there? Is that what he really is? Is that what the Democratic Party stands for? And is that what Harris is going to stand for? I don't know. Do you? I mean, what is your best guess? I can't figure it out.
That's where Joe Biden has always been.
Yeah, obviously.
That's where the Democratic Party is moving to. And Joe Biden told us that her positions are not going to deviate much from his positions. Hmm. She has not demonstrated anything to tell me anything differently.
That's true.
And what she just articulated is
crazy.
More of the same, and it's a crazy failed strategy.
Yeah, I mean, she just sounded. I've never. She sounded almost like it's. Like almost angry and hateful about the rest of the world. Like we own you. We're gonna tell you what to do. We're gonna attack you. We got bigger guns. I'm not sure.
The game has changed.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm just even if you are the biggest, baddest guy on the playground, it's just not smart to go around telling everybody you are. You know. So.
Well,
I just.
And if I could really quickly. We don't have the hypersonic technology that Russia, missile technology that Russia has and that China has.
Yeah.
We are running out of ammunition. We're running out of tanks. We don't have the military firepower on the ground. We don't have it. It's not there.
I've heard the same thing from people I've spoken with in the military area, Pentagon folks, that we don't have what we say we do in that respect, though. You know, that stuff, that's another conversation for another day, I think, because it requires a certain amount of expertise, and who knows, they might be bluffing. All right, so stick around, because when we come back, we're going to continue with some more comments about what's going on, especially with something else that was said about Tulsi Gabbard by the media and RFK Jr., which I want to get your take on it. When they call them conspiracy theorists. Interesting use of words these days. We'll be right back. Stay right there. Hey, welcome back. So, I'm Rick Sanchez, and I mentioned Tulsi Gabbard a little while ago, right? Let's talk about RFK Jr. So something happened this week which I thought was really fascinating when he finally said, you know what, I'm going to go and be on Trump's side, right? So why has the media treated this guy like he's a bank robber or something? I know he's an imperfect guy, a little controversial, done some stuff. So have I. So have we all. By the way, I think the way the media treated him has to do with why he's jumping on board the Trump train. Take a listen to what he had to say, and I think this is interesting and well stated. Take a listen to what he has to say about what the Democrats and the media did to him by snubbing him, and he contrasts it to how other independent candidates were treated in the past, like, for example, Ross Perot.
The DNC-aligned mainstream media networks maintain a near-perfect embargo on interviews with me. During his 10-month presidential campaign in 1992, Ross Perot gave 34 interviews on mainstream networks. In contrast, during the 16 months since I declared, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, and CNN combined gave only 2 live interviews. From me.
20 to 2? I mean, he's right, Wilmer. I mean, and when they did talk about him, it was about some bear he found and left in a park, and they turned that into like a terrorist act of some kind and lied about the fact that he killed the bear when he didn't. He found it. Somebody else hit it with a car. It just, it was a bit over the top, I think.
Well, there's no question, and the number 22 to 2 shows you how the mainstream now is controlling the narrative. Because they're not only doing this with candidates such as Robert Kennedy Jr., they're doing this through social media by deplatforming people.
Yeah.
They've done it to Scott Ritter by breaking into his house. They've done it with Omalley Yeshitela and the Uhuru 3, whose trial starts, I think, on the 5th of September. They are desperately trying to control the narrative. And these are examples of how they're going about doing it.
Yeah, and you know what? There's one more thing on that. Why does the media resort to name-calling of people that they disagree with? And how is that good journalism, by the way? Here, this is interesting. Listen to this. So when Tulsi Gabbard joined the Trump train also, the first thing I did is I started monitoring the reports that were out there, right? And I went through all the networks, and I found the one on ABC where just casually the reporters talking about these two individuals who are now going to join the Trump team, and they refer to Tulsi Gabbard and Kennedy as conspiracy theorists. And I'm thinking, that's not just bad journalism, it's biased journalism. And it's lazy journalism, especially from the network that's supposed to be hosting this debate. Take a listen.
It comes this morning as his campaign is highlighting the two former Democrats have joined the Trump transition team. RFK Jr. coming over just days after he dropped out of the race and endorsed Trump, and also former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard. Both are former progressive Democrats who have embraced Trump and also leaned increasingly into conspiracy theories in recent years.
And, you know, here's my point about that. If she was doing a profile on Tulsi Gabbard, you know, if I was doing a profile on you, I'd find stuff you've done that you're probably not so proud of. As, by the way, I'm much more imperfect than you are, so don't think I'm criticizing you here or that I know anything about you. But it would be fair then to say, well, when we talk about Tulsi Gabbard, there was this one incident that happened in 19, but on the other side, but no. She's just doing a 30-second quip on the fact that she's been named, and the only thing she can think of is that she's a conspiracy theorist? Seriously? That's lazy. That's lazy journalism.
First of all, you and imperfect, you're destroying the myth. Stop it. So first of all, people need to understand, as I know the history, the term conspiracy theorist was coined by the CIA as a way of dismissing people that were questioning the assassination of former President Kennedy.
Yeah.
That's a term coined by the CIA, as far as I understand.
Huh.
And what is the adage? I think it's Joseph Heller who said, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not chasing you.
Yeah.
So it is lazy journalism. It because once you dub someone a conspiracy theorist, that's along the same lines and just as reckless as dubbing someone anti-Semitic. That trope used to be used as a way to just summarily dismiss somebody. And has Robert Kennedy Jr. taken some off-center positions?
Yeah.
Sure he has. But who hasn't?
Well, so, but what about Tulsi Gabbard? I'm sorry, but I have not seen any conspiratorial statements from her other than the fact that we should not be in the policemen of the world. We shouldn't be fighting in all these wars. There are people outside the Pentagon who are making a hell of a lot of money and getting rich off these wars. Politicians are being paid to essentially engage us in these wars. Those are basically the points that she's made. None of those are conspiratorial, and I would argue most of them are factual.
But as soon as those positions start to gain traction, the dominant narrative then becomes less effective. And that is one of the major objectives of the stenographers of the elite called the New York Times, the Washington Post, and other elements of mainstream media.
It is interesting, though, isn't it, that what's going on here? We watched the Democratic campaign and the convention, pardon me, And they're going way further in the direction of bringing in the neocons. Like they had that one congressman who came and spoke, who is a Republican. His name escapes me right now. And it's interesting. So Trump is going after Democrats like Tulsi Gabbard and JFK Jr. And the Democrats are going after Republicans just so they can put them on stage to talk bad about Trump. This is fascinating how they're exchanging tools here.
Well, if you look at political labeling,
Adam Kinzinger.
You will find, you know, you can go back and look at the terms conservative and liberal, and you can go all the way back to the French Revolution, and you can see how many of these terms take on different meanings over time, hence the term neoliberal.
Yeah.
So we are seeing that, I think, also with I want to call it development, because that gives it some kind of positive connotation. But as the stereotypes that we have assigned to these parties are now changing.
Let me talk about something that's almost tragicomic right now. You ready? The Boeing Starliner capsule has left two astronauts stranded on the International Space Station. We've been talking about this week. This is nuts. I mean, these guys were supposed to be there like for 8 days. Now we're told they might be able to get them down in February, and it's not going to be Boeing that gets them down, because Boeing's capsule and rockets don't work. They're leaking helium, and the thrusters aren't thrusting, and I don't know anything about thrusters or thrusting, but take a listen to how they were talking about this on the Young Turks.
As one of our members, Art Guy, pointed out, Starliner is as safe as a 737 MAX.
Right.
Oh, wait.
Exactly. That's why I do not in any way begrudge NASA for making this decision. It is awful that these two astronauts are going to be stuck for many months in the International Space Station. They won't be able to come home until February.
I got to tell you, man, this is a movie. I mean, stranded in space, and the villain is the same guy. It's almost like, you know, Dr. No, or, I mean, Boeing strikes again. What's up with Boeing?
Well, you know, the federal government, NASA, decided that they wanted to try to privatize space flight. So they found Boeing, they found Elon Musk and SpaceX.
Yeah.
To privatize this, one of the things that is ironic or crazy to me is how they're trying to control the narrative. Because when the story first broke, they said, well, yeah, we can't bring them back when we plan to, but they're not stuck. Yeah. Well, if you can't bring them back when you wanted to, then what are they?
They're stuck.
And the other thing is, Russia has a space program. China has a space program. But, oh, we can't reach out to them for help because we have vilified them. They have now become our enemies. And so we can't cooperate with them, because I think China and or Russia could send up rescue crews. But, again, Those are our enemies now. We can't turn to them for help.
I don't know, Wilmer. Can't we all just get along?
We're trying, but we're meeting incredible resistance.
Thank you so much, my friend. It's always such a pleasure to have this conversation. Thanks, with you. It feels like just two guys having a cup of coffee or maybe even an adult beverage. That's our show. Remember to always look outside your own box. Truths, they don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll be looking for you next time.